Anne Diamond here with you on BBC Radio Berkshire. It's 9 minutes past ten. It was a bit windy driving in today. You'll notice that if you go out and about today. Really, really windy. You know, you suddenly think the car's got a mind of its own and it wants to go in a certain direction on its own. And you realise then that you're up against some really tough winds. So it's a bit wet and windy out there. Stay in and listen to the radio. I have a lovely man for you to meet. He's Bob Early from Reading. He has had quite a life. In fact, he's had such an interesting life. About three books have been written about it. And in there are stories that most of us only read about in history books. But Bob, who's now 98 years old, has served in World War II in the UK and Italy, and finally in a covert operation in Germany identifying Nazi war criminals. Well, to tell me more on all of these stories and lots of other things besides, I'm joined by Bob in the studio now. And a very good morning, Bob.
Oh, hello.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, oh, it's lovely to meet you. Now, come on, tell us about this covert operation in Germany.
Well,
because you were a very highly skilled cabinet maker and joiner, weren't
yes,
you?
That's right, yes.
And weren't you sent out to Germany once it was occupied to actually sort of infiltrate one of the factories?
Well, the idea, our regiment went over there and to take over that area in the Harz Mountains, Bad Lauterburg. And it was a V2 factory, actually.
Oh, was
and they used the main office block as the quarters. And my job was to go in the V2 factory and arrange take over the Tischlerei, which means the cabinet making workshop, and which was existing in there, and to use that as for teaching.
Yeah.
So I had to move them out to another building next to it and then take it over, which didn't make me very popular, obviously.
So ostensibly you were teaching?
That was the undercover.
Yeah.
So, but then the idea was that I was in the factory so that I'd get to know the management and whoever, and try and wrinkle out the ex-Nazis, SS mostly.
And you did identify one man that you thought...
Well, one man in particular was Herr Heinrich, yes, and he was eventually executed. He went to Nuremberg trial.
Did he indeed?
What?
Why were you suspicious of him?
Well, there were three directors. There was Herr Schickert, who owned the factory, and then there was Herr Schumann, who was the general manager, and they had an office each, and then another office. And I noticed every time I went in there that sometimes the man was in there, and sometimes he wasn't, and but nothing going on there.
Mm.
You know, officers have generally got plenty of paper on the desk and all that sort of thing. And I suspected him, and so, but I had to be sure because...
He was bearded at the time, wasn't he?
Yes, he had a small goatee beard.
Yeah.
But you had to be very sure because you couldn't accuse anyone without being sure.
So didn't
you
sneak
in
there?
Went in the factory one night with a torch, the lights out, and got into his office, had a master key, and I noticed his desk was completely cleared, and there's nothing on there at all. He obviously wasn't the working director. And then had a good look around. Then I saw a cupboard in the corner, and over there, like a wardrobe, in there was an old suit hanging on a hanger. And then there was a drawer just under a shelf, and I opened that drawer, and in there was a rolled-up tie, a handkerchief, and a photograph. And he was very foolish of him to leave that there. And that was of a man with a wife and two children. And
it was a man without a beard, but you suspected it was him.
And he was without a beard. And the following day, actually, I was having coffee with Herr Schumann, the managing director, and this Herr Heinrich was in there. And as I went into his office, so he came out. He would never confront me.
Mm.
And he came out, and we had a very close look. I then went back to the headquarters and looked up the mug shots, and the rest was history.
Yeah.
He was in the arrest. I was not involved in the arrest, of course, otherwise that would bait my cover.
Would have blown your cover, yeah.
But he was arrested, yes.
And he was this man, Heinrich, and he was guilty of war crimes.
He was called the Butcher of Paris, and he sent hundreds of people to the gas chambers, and he sent a lot of children, hundreds of children, direct to the gas chambers. Most people went and they were interrogated, they were given jobs, that sort of thing, and then executed, weren't they? But a lot of children were sent direct, and he signed the paper that sent them direct to him. Course. He was a very bad man.
He was a very bad man, and you helped bring him to justice. Well, in fact, you were instrumental in bringing him to justice.
Yeah, there were many others I had done and tackled as well. Of course, I had one list of 88 men. They were all arrested. Only 6 came back. From there, they were taken to Berlin, where they were interrogated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, it was... I was in quite a lot of danger. At one time, I was nearly thrown into the furnace. That's another story.
Tell me more. Well, no,
that would make another program.
You can't just leave that hanging there. I tell you what, yes, no, you can. Because what we'll do is you can tell us that story in a few moments. Because, it's not just about your war remembrances. When you came back from the war, you were involved in all sorts of interesting things. And I'll tell everybody about that too, because, you've just got to listen to this.
You've done your homework.
I've done my homework on you. Well, there are 3 books written about you. Now, we're going to tell the next part of Bob's story then in a couple of seconds. It involves this historic piece of television footage from 1955. Listen to this.
Well, in the last 45 minutes, we've looked at the past and the present, and we've even had a peep just now at the future. You know, while this has been going on, I was looking at the studio clock and seeing the little red second hand going round and round and round, and it suddenly occurred to me that it's very nearly 24 hours that we've been watching the studio clock. It was at 9:30 last night that I opened the general election programs. Nearly 24 hours have gone by, and we've been at it practically ever since. I rather think, you know, that it's time now that I closed the general election programs by saying good night.
That takes you back. That was Richard Dimbleby.
Yes.
Presenting the very first televised coverage of the general election. That was on the BBC in 1955. Now, what you wouldn't know is that Bob Early was behind all of that because, well, it's a story about ping pong balls and basically our first ever swingometer, or the first ever graphic way that television chose to show how, as MPs won a seat, how things were building up. And you were doing it with a gadget, really, that you invented, ping pong balls.
I made this gadget to be about 6 foot wide, about 4 foot high, and there were channels in it, and I had to get 650 ping pong balls, half of them painted black, the others were grey, light grey, and then if a Conservative came in, I'd drop a black one in, if a Labour came in, I'd drop a grey one in on the left-hand side.
That's absolutely extraordinary.
And went on, because we were rehearsing for 3 days.
Oh, bad.
Grace Wyndham Goldie was the producer.
Yes.
She was very good.
Yeah.
And of course, Richard Dimbleby was the compere. He took over, and he was a very nice man. Very, very, very efficient he was.
Yeah. And you were there behind the scenes. Did we see your hand? I made the gadget and worked the gadget.
And about 1 o'clock in the morning, I think, and I had a note handed to me by the studio manager, and it's from the governor of the BBC, and it says something to the effect, your gadget comes over very well, thank you, and congratulations.
Isn't that extraordinary?
That's so nice. I think I've still got that note.
Oh, you should keep it. How did you even get into that world of building things?
Well, that's another one. I came out of the forces, and... I started in the back garden, actually, in a big shed.
Yeah.
And I was doing a job, a special cabinet there that was going to be the British Industries Fair, and they were going to be presented there before the King and King George V.
Yeah.
And while I was doing that, a man came there from the BBC, Alfred Wormser, and he was well known in BBC, and he... said he'd been asked about making a special gadget that would depict spring, you know, flowers coming up,
yes,
and that sort of thing, you see.
Yeah.
And would I be interested in doing that sort of thing? So eventually I agreed and made this thing to be about 4 foot square and about 4 or 5 foot high. I'll be underneath there working the gadgets. As the music came in,
before the days of graphics, I suppose.
Come the flowers.
Yeah,
you
had to have something actually working in front of it. And you became known as Mr. Gadget.
Well, that was my first one. As a matter of fact, before we left the studio there, to take the gadget back to my workshop. Before that, they wouldn't let us go without saying, you know, so what else can you do? And I wasn't really interested in that. Wasn't cabinet making been there?
But one thing led to another.
Well, yes, it took over. In the
as
next
it
20
does.
Years,
yeah.
I was.
Well, we've got lots more stories to tell with Bob Early from Early in just a couple of moments.